Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Go to theathletic.com/downtodunk to get the Athletic for $3.99 a month. Alex, there's so much going on. What do we do with all this information, Al? What?
What a great question, Andrew. I just started recording.
Oh.
I was trying to delay so I wouldn't have to tell you, hey, the first sentence I say isn't going to be recorded. Oh, yeah, Andrew, where do we start, Andrew? Where do you want to start? We have breaking news. We have multiple pieces of breaking
yeah,
news.
Yeah, let's start with...
We have old news. We have medium news.
Let's start with the most interesting news to me. It's the Kawhi Leonard news.
Kawhi Leonard out for Game 5 with a knee injury suffered in Game 4, and his status for the rest of the series is in jeopardy.
Dunked too hard.
Crazy.
Dunked too hard on Derek Favors.
Was it on that play?
I don't know. I don't know what play it was on. Has anybody reported that?
I remember there was a play when he came down weird and he grimaced, but I don't remember what the exact play was.
Yeah.
Man, that's so huge.
It's huge.
They're going back to game. They looked like they were in control of this series in game 4.
Yeah.
I mean, the Jazz started figuring out some stuff really late. They started actually giving the ball to Rudy Gobert on offense a little bit more, mm-hmm. and it was working out a little bit. But, you know, if Mike Conley wasn't going to come back, and we still don't know his status for game 5, but it just seemed like the Clippers had kind of figured them out. And with Mitchell not being at 100%, although he was still, you know, still putting a lot of points in the basket. I felt like it was probably over, if not in 6 and 7.
Yeah.
And now everything changes again. I mean, I tweeted that thing out the other day. It was like, how many times have you switched your title favorite pick? And I feel like I got to do it again. Because I had started like buying into the Clippers in these last couple games. And like, man, it goes back to stars. Like you have Kawhi and PG. If PG's playing well, like the Clippers seem like they're going to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm back to square one.
I know. Yesterday people were asking me about it. I'm like, well, I guess like Phoenix is the team that looks the best, like the most cohesive and has played the best throughout the playoffs without any lagging here or there. And shoot, like now Chris Paul is out indefinitely. So Kawhi Leonard did tweak his knee in that late game drive where he stayed in it for a bit and then went out. But he probably should have been out of the game anyways at that point.
That is such a huge blow. Paul George, though, he has an opportunity because led this Clippers team, Andrew, that would be crazy if he beat this Jazz team.
It's incomprehensible that it could happen, isn't it?
I mean, it feels that way right now. Yes, absolutely.
Can you imagine that Paul George puts this team on his back? Has anybody ever said this sentence? Paul George puts the team on his back and leads them to the Western Conference Finals.
No, but you know there's a first time for everything. First time for everything, Andrew. Who knows?
There certainly is a first time for everything.
We're in the wild, wild west. Let's play out. I just saw a tweet. This is crazy. So on June 14th, 2 days ago, Kurt Goldsberry tweeted that Kyrie Irving will be the 7th different All-Star to miss a playoff game this year, the most in a season in NBA history. And now Kawhi makes it 8, and CP possibly makes it 9.
Wow.
So having 9 All-Stars miss at least one game. I mean, it's so funny because on the one hand, I want to be the person that says, no, there shouldn't be an asterisk. Like, teams deal with injuries every single year. Like, there's always major injuries in a playoff run. Somebody benefits, somebody doesn't. But at some point, like, if everyone's hurt, like, what is this? What are we watching?
It's been what it's been all season, though. It's like, it's the same with, like, the MVP debate. It's been war of attrition the whole time, right?
True. Yeah, I think there was an expectation that, oh, you know, if we can just get to the playoffs, teams will do what they have to do during the regular season to get these guys healthy for the playoffs, mm-hmm. and then we can have a normal playoffs, mm-hmm. and it has not been that Mm-mm. at all. Mm-mm.
There had to, and listen, this was always going to be like the sacrificial lamb season, right? Where we have to get back on the NBA schedule, and the only way to do it is to get the season going and to push it as hard as we can, right? And they did. And there are consequences to that. They have basically had 2 seasons in a row, like back to back, and it's not good.
Well, and what's crazy is that was what was said about the bubble season. Like, this is going to be asterisk season. This is going to be the season where weird stuff happens in playoffs for other reasons, you know, not being at your home arena and everything, and being able to all stay in the same place every night. But yeah, and then you see them releasing their schedule, and it's like, yep, we're starting back middle of October. Everything's going back to normal. Like, not really making any significant changes to kind of lighten this load.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even that is like a quick turnaround for the league again. Like, it's one more quick turnaround for the NBA. Because the offseason, like, free agency is pushed up a month. Like, everything is pushed up a month. The finals is pushed up a month. And then it's that one less month they have for rest. And it's so next season, there still could be consequences that happen for next season. And hopefully the year after that, things will be relatively normal. But yeah, I don't know. Also, there's also the reality, like, is an injury to Kawhi Leonard shocking, you know, with the stat, like, the way that the, like, amount that he's played in the playoffs, the way that he's played in the playoffs, is it shocking that Kawhi Leonard, who has been, like, pretty fragile, like, the poster boy for taking time off during the regular season because of injuries, a guy like Stephen A. Smith, who, whatever you want to know about Steve, whatever you want to say about Stephen A. Smith, the guy, like, knows a lot. It's like, basically, like, this is like a very, like, a guy that is closer to his way out of the league than he is, like, in his prime, just because of the way his knees are. So it's probably, I mean, it's problematic in a lot of ways, everything is, but also, like, you have to look at who some of these players are that are getting hurt, and you have to just ask yourself the question, like, oh, like Mike Conley too. Like, Mike Conley's missed a ton of time for that exact same injury. Is that because of this? Like, I don't know. Like, some of it is that too.
And to tie it back into the Thunder, you know, we talk about the Patrick Beverley year with Westbrook. We talk about the calf injury to Ibaka.
Yeah.
When he came back against the Spurs. Think about how many teams are going to have, like, how many fan bases will have a legitimate excuse this year that they will tell themselves, like, oh, remember 2021, if we had just had Jamal Murray.
Right.
Like, legitimately, mm-hmm. Denver would have been a favorite. Mm-hmm. If the Clippers, if they end up losing to the Jazz because Kawhi can't come back this series, legitimate claim. Like, Lakers fans with Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
Like, that series, they probably win that series against the Suns, or at least it goes a lot longer. It's just, it's nuts, and I don't really know how to think about it. The thing that I keep coming back to for the other teams, it's like, it's amazing how well this is set up for the Sixers, and they have not, like, really taken advantage of it.
I know.
Like, they look so dumb in that game 4 against the Hawks.
That was a travesty.
Like, they could have got up 3-1. They would have been looking great. They would have maybe been playing, you know, this dumb Bucks team or the beat-up Nets team. Yeah. Like, it really set up well for them, and now this is going at least 6. and knowing the Sixers, it will probably go seven.
I know. And they're just so clearly the better team in that series.
Yes.
Which is infuriating. Yes. So absolutely, that game was so infuriating to watch. They just need to take care of business. Like, they need to show their dominance, because the thing about it is, this Sixers, like, if the Sixers have a title window, I'd say it's between now and the end of July. They need to take it. Like, this is their chance to go win the NBA title. I don't think that they're good enough to beat, like, the best teams when they're healthy. They're not good enough to beat the Lakers when they're healthy. They're not good enough to beat the Nets when they're healthy. Both of those teams could be gone. Now, the Nets were incredible last night. The Bucks still have a chance to win that series, but it feels very bleak. But with the injuries to Kyrie Irving, and we don't know if James Harden's going to be able to continue, like, this is your chance. Like, you need to go take it. And then I think they can beat anybody out west. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same way. And they are one of those teams, along with the Bucks, where I think you could have made an amazing case for them during the regular season. Like, this team is most primed to win the championship.
Yeah.
And they've just looked different in the playoffs. Like, it just has not worked out as you planned. And you know, obviously they took care of business against the Wizards in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
But just, like, not really having a player on their roster that can both create for others and score for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the fact that you have to sit Ben Simmons at the end of games.
Yeah.
It's just, all these things start cropping up, and it's like, oh, that's why I told myself to never really buy into the Sixers team. And yet, yeah, they still have a great chance this year.
Mm-hmm. I got to trust Joel Embiid more than I do Giannis at this point, though.
Oh, yeah. Even as terrible as he was in the second half of that game, I think he was like 0 for 12. Like, he at least, well, I say, he most of the time knows what his strengths are and what he should be doing. He did take some, like, dumb threes at, like, very key points, which Giannis does that too. But I do feel like Joel Embiid knows what he's supposed to do at the end of a game. Like, that last play that he missed, that layup, like, that was a beautiful play. Like, that was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just missed it. Whereas with Giannis, like, that game last night, going to the backing down Harden, who can't move, and then doing the fadeaway, like, that's the play everyone's talking about. Like, he's taking this Kobe shot. It's like, who do you think you are? Like, obviously you're a two-time MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, but, like, that's not the reason.
Yeah.
It's not because you shot incredibly difficult Kobe-esque fadeaways. What are you doing?
Well, the most egregious one is fumbling the ball at the end of the game, right?
Oh, yeah. It was brutal. The fact that they were... So, obviously, we should talk about KD. KD was amazing.
Unbelievable. One of the best KD performances I've ever seen. And I've seen I've seen probably all of the great ones. And that one still, was a different level.
And let's be honest, one of the reasons why that was one of the greatest performances we've seen is because it's one of the first times where we've seen everything being on his plate.
Like, yeah.
He, if they're going to win, he's going to have to do something extraordinary.
Yep.
But he did. Somebody, Micah Adams tweeted last night, you know, we've talked about the Basketball Reference stat game score, which tries to, like, encapsulate how good a player's game was into just a single number. So he finished with a game score last night of 50.4, which is higher than any playoff game from Michael Jordan, LeBron James, or Kobe Bryant.
That's, like, I believe it. Like, after seeing it, yeah, I have zero doubts that that is absolutely true. He was just hitting shot after shot. Like, when he was hitting, like, back-to-back, deep, difficult threes, you're just like, oh, like, nobody does that. Nobody does that.
Right. And yet, if the Bucks had just had a normal game, like a normal game plan, if they had adjusted at all, they would have won that game by double digits, despite even with KD doing everything he did.
I know.
And even still, they had a chance at the end. Like you talked about Giannis fumbling that pass.
Oh, that pass is a dunk. He had a dunk.
Like, that was one of those games where it feels like every single thing has to go right for the Nets to come away with that. Like, KD literally has to have a transcendent playoff performance unlike anything we've ever seen just for them to have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that, but when the buzzer sounded, it feels like even though they won by six, like, wow, they stole that game. Like, yeah. The Bucks should have won that game.
Yeah, they were up 17. And
yeah.
And they just insisted on, no, more Brook Lopez. More.
Let's keep dropping against everyone.
let's play drop coverage against the fastest seven-footer in the league who's going to get past our guy every time. Let's do that.
And not only that, like, who else on the Nets are you worried about driving to the rim? Like, Harden wasn't going to be doing it last night.
Harden. Gosh, I don't know. Here's the thing. I'm credit to the Nets for winning that game. Durant played every second of that game. Harden played 46 minutes in a game where he was like, I don't know if I can play.
Right. More than any other Buck.
He didn't sit. I don't think he sat in the second half because I think he played 22 minutes in the first and then didn't sit in the second half. And he scored 5 points. He was 1 of 10.
Yeah, I think he was like 0 of 8 from 3.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, 1 of 10, 0 of 8 from 3. Like, he was not driving. Yeah. Like, he was not interested in going to the rim. No one else on that team really scares you going to the rim. And yet, do they adjust at all? Do they account for that at all? Because they're paying this drop coverage against KD, who obviously he can score from anywhere, but one of the places where he's most deadly is the mid-range.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, you can just have that shot every single time, whenever you want. Mm-hmm. We're not going to change at all.
Mm-hmm.
You can do whatever you want. No big deal.
Yeah, absolutely insane. And then you had, like, the big, like, it was the Jeff Green game, too. Like, one of Jeff Green's most insane games ever. He was 7 of 8 from three. Yeah. 27 points, one board, three assists. Like, good defense. He was incredible. And, like, Blake was good. Like, Blake has been good. Like, he's been really solid for them. And then that was it. Like, Joe Harris, 1 of 7 from three. Bruce Brown, 1 of 5 from the field. James Harden, 0 of 8 from three, 1 of 10 overall. Landry Shamet hit a three and played some pretty good minutes for them, but like that was it. That's all they got.
It was all they got, and the Bucks still couldn't win.
And the Bucks couldn't win.
And it was so many things. I mean, what Giannis does, like his play, because on the one hand you look at his box score and it's like awesome, like super efficient. I mean, he's 14 of 22, I think. You know, he missed obviously his normal amount of free throws, but like he still got his points, he got his stats. And he did it efficiently, and yet watching the game, there are just so many moments where it's like, why are you taking that shot? Why do you have the ball right now? And then when other guys have the ball, it's like, why are you not attacking James Harden
right
every single time down the court? I mean, if this was, for instance, if they had traded last summer for Chris Paul, which they could have gotten much cheaper than Drew Holiday, don't you think Chris Paul would have been going at James Harden on every single trip down the court?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Every single trip. I mean, we saw it in that game against the Lakers when they tried to play Anthony Davis. I feel like Booker went at Anthony Davis like three straight plays at the beginning of that game. Just like test him out. Like, let's see you do it. And then he was out of the game within a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see watching James Harden last night, who could not really move laterally, like, just do that every single time. You could maybe get him out of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely. Yeah, I think you definitely could have. I think you definitely could have.
And instead, they're like posting him up, which is like, if there's one thing James Harden is good at defensively, where he's not going to have to move laterally, they just post him up.
Yeah, it was disastrous.
He waved the Nets off on that play. They thought he needed help, and he said, no, I got Giannis here. No big deal. I can't move, but I'm not worried about this at all.
That is so sad.
Would be going insane if I was a Bucks fan.
Yeah.
Just hearing all that BS during the season about how, like, yeah, they're not winning as many games this year, but, like, things are different. Like, they're trying new stuff. This is a team that's going to be more prepared for the playoffs. And despite them sweeping the Heat in the first round, they have been terrible in the playoffs. Like, even in that series, they were not good. Giannis was not good in that series. It's just Miami was so terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, their offense, I sent a text to you guys because we were talking about it. their offense dropped from like a 116 offensive rating to a 106 offensive rating, which is down where like Oklahoma City was for most of the season. That's what their offense has been like in the playoffs. And you say, well, defenses get better. Miami Heat are a good defensive team, but like the Nets aren't.
No.
Like, well, why can you not solve this Nets team? Like, you're bigger than everyone on the court. And yet you're still just, like, jacking up threes. And by the way, they almost hit 50% of their threes last night.
I know.
And they still lost.
It's such a huge, such a huge missed opportunity, man.
It's so huge. And because this was, I mean, more than any other team probably, this was an all-in season. I mean, they still have these guys for the future. But the fact that they made that trade for Jrue Holiday, giving up all those picks... They gave up another pick for P.J. Tucker,
yeah,
who's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. It's just so frustrating because all of those moves made sense and made you excited about the Bucks going all in,
mm-hmm,
for a championship.
Mm-hmm.
And yet here they are again, where it's just like, what the hell are you guys doing? Have you learned anything?
Yeah, I don't know. I love the Jrue Holiday move. He's been really good for them. But you just... wonder, had they just saved those chips for James Harden? Because like the trade is about the same, right? Like it's not that different. What Houston got and what New Orleans got. So
yeah, I mean, I just think the Chris Paul thing is so much more realistic.
Sure. Oh, it's absolutely realistic. Absolutely realistic. They wouldn't even have to give up as much as they did for Jrue Holiday.
And the reason why that move would have been so much better is because Chris Paul brings with him that cachet of, no, I am going to bring up the ball. I am leading this team. I am going to set things up. Whereas, like, that's not really Jrue Holiday's game.
Yeah.
And so it allows for this Giannis, point Giannis thing,
yeah,
which has looked good in the past but is not looking good right now. And right. I don't know what they do going forward. And it makes me think, you know what? Some type of trade for CJ McCollum might actually make sense for this team because that's the type of player they need. Like someone who can play make, who can get to the rim, who can shoot threes, who can basically do a lot of things while being a problem defensively. I think CJ would actually help them out a lot, their offense.
Yeah, I just don't know if he's a set the table guy. I feel like he's one more of kind of the same character.
You know? Yeah, I mean, he's a much better offensive player than Jrue Holiday. Jrue Holiday hasn't scored 20 points in the playoffs.
I know. I just
like that's a problem.
Like part of my deal is I just don't trust him. I just like, do you trust CJ McCollum?
Like, why do you trust Jrue? Like Jrue
I don't trust Jrue. I'm just saying that like they may have missed the boat on like Chris Paul and James Harden. Is what I'm saying.
Oh, I for sure believe that. But I just think they need to bring someone who's more dynamic offensively, which I do think CJ is more dynamic than either Chris Middleton or a Jrue Holiday.
Yeah.
Because their offense is just like stuck in mud. It just looks so bad every single trip.
Oh,
they
actually, yeah.
I'll say they looked good in the first half last night. I felt like, especially like the first quarter, like they were running a sensible offense.
Yeah, they were flowing then. But then... like they were basically only getting things in the paint at the end. Like those were the only shots that they were willing to take, almost like they were scared, you know, to do anything otherwise.
So frustrating. And on the flip side, like you could totally imagine if they got a really good coach next year.
Yeah.
This could look completely different.
Who would you want?
Well, hell, if Eric Spoelstra's name is out there, go get Spo. Why is Spo? Why are there rumors about Spo to Portland?
I don't know.
If that was ever a scenario, obviously that would be it.
I don't know. I mean, he went to school. Obviously, like the rumors are about like him going to school there, and you know, kind of right. Like a homecoming type of deal. But I don't know, man. I mean,
what about D'Antoni? I know you told me he's 90 years old.
I know. And some people are excited about that. That's great.
That he's 90?
That he's 90. They're ready for his birthday party. It's going to be great. Man, I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know about that. I think he...
They're obviously going to make a change. There's no way Bud survives this. This has been too egregious.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess I would like to see what D'Antoni could do with that Bucks team. I don't think he'd be playing Brook Lopez, that's for sure. But
Bring Jason Kidd back.
I don't understand the Jason Kidd stuff either.
Yeah, I don't really either. Because it wasn't like his coaching resume was so amazing.
Right. No, it was not.
I don't know. Maybe the Bucks find their Nick Nurse. You know, maybe it's not a big name like D'Antoni.
Yeah.
I mean, they have Darvin Ham. They have Charles Lee. Like, maybe they really believe in those guys.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Maybe that's how this turns out. Because Bud is, like, so stuck in his ways.
Yeah.
Contrast him with Ty Lue, who it doesn't always work out. But Ty Lue, the second, like, after a game, if something didn't go well in that game, he's going to throw something else at the wall. Like, he'll try something.
Yeah, it's true. And that's super frustrating. it's just all more of the same stuff with Bud.
It is. It's brutal. And it's been years of it now. Years of it.
Yes, it is. It's insane. Back to Kawhi. You know what Kawhi's shooting from two?
Probably some absurd amount. He's been amazing.
He's shooting in the playoffs. He's shooting 64.5% from two on 13 attempts.
He's getting close to the eight numbers.
Yeah. And he's taking jumpers.
Yeah. Oh, when Kawhi's on... Because, like, everything about him is so mechanical.
Yeah.
When Kawhi's on, it really does feel like there's, like, no stopping this dude. There was a few of those games against Dallas. I think it was game four.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was just like, this is absurd. Like, you just can't do anything. Like, just pack it in. Like, you're not beating the Clippers when Kawhi's like this.
Yeah.
To take that away from that team. I mean, this team already felt, like, patched together in terms of, like, their offensive ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And it really felt like you really need everyone to really manage this without a true point guard, because it doesn't seem like playoff Rondo is ever happening for them.
Yeah.
So to take him off this team, I'm really interested to see how bad it looks, or like what Ty Lue can get out of this roster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't feel great about it, especially if Mike Conley can play. Do we know his status?
Nothing's been announced yet. I'll double check my feed, but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, huge opportunity for the Jazz.
They have to go take it.
You have to.
Like, similar to the window that I was talking about with the Sixers, this is the Jazz's window. Like, here it is. You have Chris Paul out. You have Kawhi Leonard out. Take it. Go take it.
Nope. That, I mean, that would be just as devastating as any of these other teams losing. Like even going back to, like, old Houston teams, like, the Jazz are good enough to win a championship this year, like, given these circumstances. They are absolutely good enough at this point. So, especially if they get Mike Conley back. But
so there's been four players in the history of the NBA that have shot, that have had these shooting splits, shooting 64% or better from two, 39% or better from three. Actually, hold on. Let me make one more adjustment here.
Are you on Stathead?
I'm Stathead. Okay. Gosh. Okay. So there's been two players in the history of the NBA that have shot 64% or better from two, 39% or better from two, while also shooting at least 13 attempts from two, which is a lot. It's Kawhi and Dwayne Wade, and that's it.
Oh, wow. I would have guessed LeBron, like one of those Miami years.
Yeah. I don't know what criteria LeBron misses.
I'm guessing it's threes, although he's had some nice three-point runs in the playoffs.
He's had years where he shot 40%. But no, like, it's Dwayne Wade. It's 2009-10 Dwayne Wade, and it's Kawhi. And that's the end of the list of what, like, statistically what he's doing. That's just, it's obviously kind of this random number, but still, like, it just shows like how devastating he's been in the playoffs. He's been one of the better guys in the playoffs, period. And then for him to go down is like, I mean, I don't like the Clippers. It's great, but it's a real bummer because we were seeing like historical stuff from him. And I worry about Durant, man. Like, that performance was spectacular, but I worry about him playing 48
especially
minutes.
This year.
Yeah.
It's like, who's next?
I know.
Like, this, it's not like we're going to be done with injuries in this postseason.
Probably not. And if you were to, like, bet, it's probably the guy that played every single second of the game and had to do everything on offense and defense for the team because nobody else could do anything. Right?
We're going to end up with, like, Joe Ingles as finals MVP just because he's, like, the last man standing.
Actually, I would kind of like that a little bit.
Hey, speaking of Dwayne Wade, did you watch The Cube, Andrew? I watched The Cube
last
night.
You did watch it?
Dwayne Wade's...
No, I did not. Did not watch The Cube. Thoughts on The Cube?
Thoughts on The Cube. I enjoyed it. I don't like that the little box talks. I don't like that it has a voice.
Oh, it talks?
And is sentient. Yeah, it talks. I don't like that part. Because he sounds like the banker from Deal or No Deal. I get a little confused there. But the individual games that you play, you know, they're so simple. They're deceivingly simple, Andrew. Mm-hmm. I kind of enjoy that part of it. And they're all like physical activities. And then you can call in Dwayne Wade whenever you want. I thought it was fine.
Yeah, that's weird. That's a weird thing. Dwayne's doing a lot.
He is.
You know?
I mean, he's a good personality. I like him.
Yeah, you think he is?
Yeah, yeah. I like Dwayne Wade.
Okay. Cool. All right. Let's go to the stream. JD Brown is here. Tyler Field, the Flukey from Germany. Tom Bystander says, I can't stop thinking about next Tuesday. We'll talk about that after our break. Miguel Davila is here. Thomas Eldridge. Nate Sanders. Last Wednesday pod before the lottery. That's right.
Oh, it's true. Wow.
Nathan in Dubbo, Australia. We have Dave Perrick in Wanakee, Wisconsin. We have Chad Scott. I've started the stream late. I apologize to everybody. We were sitting here talking just to ourselves for a little while. Apologies for that. Trevor Halbach in Tulsa. Jay says, what's up, fellas? Simon Shin, hello from L.A., from Simon Eat Dog. I don't know what that means, but thanks for being here. Let's see. No Joy from Australia. Bradley Ross from Broken Arrow. We have Nathan Creamer in Edmond. What's up? Let's see. Tyler Field saying something sad. I won't even say it on the stream, Tyler. Chad Scott, incredibly tired in Yukon, Oklahoma. Thanks for joining anyways. Jake Hendricks in Kansas City. We have Ty Gatewood in Silky Town, West Virginia. We have Jesse Smith. He says, from afar, I always thought that Bud was a good coach and wondered why he keeps getting fired, and now I get it. Let's see. Michael Roth, he said that watching Scott Brooks' era Thunder offense felt like the Bucks last night. I actually text you guys that it felt like so Scott Brooksy, where it's like, no, we're going to play our guys. This is what we do. So bad. Let's see. Anybody else? Jesse Smith is in Florida. Hey, shouts. The tall shot in OKC. Hoopsock 69, who I believe is still on the moon. Alex Bullerjack, what's up, Alex? He's in Bethany, Oklahoma. Andrew Gibson in Stillwater. And then Miguel Davila says, I'm sensing the fry pot is an hour of lottery simulation. Yeah, probably right. Kyler Kendrick, he says, Poku here, checking in from Poku Land. Thank you. Hope you guys are doing well. And we'll be right back after this quick break. And we're back after that quick break. Alex, the lottery is on Tuesday. If you are in or around Oklahoma City, or even maybe a few hours away, come join us at the Mule in Edmond. It's at 16 South Broadway in Edmond. It's going to be a super fun time, and we're hoping to pack the house and be excited or sad together, all in one place. So come join us. Come get some good food. The food is amazing. We'll talk more about the food on Friday, I assume. We'll have everybody give their favorite thing to get at the Mule. Alex, what's your favorite thing at the Mule, by the way?
Well, unfortunately, I can't do dairy, so a grilled cheese place is tough. However, The Mule has a great turkey avocado sandwich.
Yeah.
I think it's turkey bacon avocado, perhaps.
Yeah.
And I get that, and I get it with their fries, which are, some of the best fries in OKC. I love their fries.
Yeah, the fries are really good.
And then you get a cold beer.
Tall Shot OKC is asking what time. You can come really whatever time. The lottery starts. The lottery show starts at 7:30. And it's like 90% fluff, 10% information about the 10% the information that you actually want. So they're going to go through like, look who won the lottery last year. Here's the history of the lottery. Here's the guys that you like in the draft. There's a picture of Cade Cunningham. You know, they'll do that for 25 minutes. And then they'll actually go to the results. So you can come whenever. If you want to eat, I would say be there by 6 or 6:30 or even earlier if you'd like to like sit down and have some food and enjoy yourself. And then if you just want to come for the lottery portion, you're free to come at like 7, 7:30, and you can just hang out and just be there. So
hang out and have a beer.
Yeah. Lively Beer Works is going to be there, man. So it should be a great time. I'm excited about it. It's our first event since lockdown and COVID and everything. So it should be a fantastic time. So join us then. Alex, you want to take a tankathon spin?
Yes. What were you gonna say? Only one.
Okay, only one.
It has to be a good one.
Ooh, I'm nervous.
Yeah, that's how it should be. You shouldn't get to do it 10 times.
Come on, Dad. All right.
One time. Here we go. And. Wow. See, this is one of the bad scenarios, Andrew.
This is reality. Look at this. Is just
reality.
This is a good hard look at reality. So Orlando won. Sacramento 2, Houston 3, Toronto 4, Detroit 5. That would suck for Detroit too. And then OKC 6. Sure. Yeah.
That's so six that's and, reality, and you can't re-spin reality, Andrew.
You can't. 6 and 18. And then the problem is like there's no, and maybe that's not the worst thing in the world. There's no consensus six best player in this draft. I think it would be quite the mystery as to who OKC would select at that spot.
Oh, for sure. And this is one of the reasons why I know you and Mikey are already doing it, but it's one of the reasons why I am refusing to jump into like really learning about these draft guys until we know. Mm-hmm. Because if this ends up how it is, where we just get the sixth pick, like there's no reason for me to learn about Jalen Suggs, Cade Cunningham, like Jalen Green. We're not getting those guys.
Well,
I'm not going to learn about them.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule out a trade. But yeah, it's at that point you have to believe that it's like pretty unlikely that they get any of those guys. And we're going to do our Jonathan Kuminga one this week. And Kuminga's really interesting. He's really interesting.
Real quick on the, we were talking about the playoffs, all these teams that should feel like this was the year we could do it. And obviously it's only going to happen for one team. A guy I follow on Twitter, Jason Maples, he said, Warriors really ruined a golden opportunity not chasing wins. It's like, yeah, that's another team. Like if they were healthy, they were at the end of the season, but if they had actually like tried to win games by like putting better pieces around that core that they have, even though it's just Draymond and Steph, like if they had gotten to this point, like, yeah, they'd be just as good as any other team in the playoffs right now.
What could they have done? I guess would be my question.
I mean, what could they have done? I mean, it would have to be something other than Kelly Oubre, because that yeah. was like their move to make, and that's what they decided to use it on.
Are you going to redact all your Kelly Oubre takes, all your preseason Kelly Oubre takes?
No, because I watch and see what he gets paid this summer. Watch and see.
I'm interested. I don't know. Like, do the Warriors keep him? Like, the only reason the Warriors keep him is so that he can be on their books and so that they can trade him, right?
I mean, if he leaves, then they don't get to use that roster spot.
They almost have to re-sign him.
They have to. Yes, it's very similar to like a Norm Powell in Portland situation.
Yeah.
Definitely. Norm Powell would fit better.
Yeah.
Go sign Norm Powell.
Yeah, they could have had George Hill.
Could have had George Hill.
And really all they would have had to do is take off the protections on their pick. But would that be worth it? Like, I don't know that would even be worth it for them.
Probably not for George Hill.
Yeah.
Obviously, what they... It's more... So they obviously had one big move. But it's also the fact that they're like... Honestly, like 5 through 9 players are all like former G Leaguers or first or second year players.
Yeah. Mostly not good players. I just don't know that. I don't know if that's fair to the Warriors or Warriors fans to say that. They couldn't even
beat Memphis. I think it absolutely is.
They couldn't even beat Memphis.
Yeah, in one game.
I know. They couldn't beat him in one game.
I mean, they were one of the hottest teams down the stretch. I think if that team had been built better, even without Klay Thompson, based on the season we got from Steph, like if you just have sub in Jay Crowder, who was available, instead of one of these random G Leaguers that they were playing, if you get a couple guys like that, just veterans, instead of building up the back of your roster with guys who probably won't be on the league, which is what they did last year as well.
Yeah.
Remember Kai Bowman?
Oh, I could never forget Kai Bowman. I don't know, man. I'm just not. They were too far away. They had like hardly any rotation players, any like real live rotation players.
Do you want to talk about All NBA?
Yeah, we can talk All NBA.
So All NBA was announced yesterday. It was going to be. There's this year more than any other year, there were going to be significant snubs.
Yeah.
Snubs and flubs. But I think especially this year, and it's probably recency bias, but you know, Trey, Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell, seeing what those guys are doing in the playoffs makes you kind of like rethink their regular season. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, these guys are not significantly, but these guys are even better than I thought. Like, mm-hmm. You see what they're doing in the playoffs. You see them taking it to a different level when the stakes are high. And it's like, wow, these guys should have been on these teams. But I would say, and Jason Tatum. I mean, I think Jason Tatum has a great case. I think there's actually a lot of guys who have a great case. Mm-hmm. Who would you, one, if you could choose one of those guys to make it, who didn't make it, who would you pick? And then two, who would you take off? So who do you think is at the end of the line?
I know, that's the tough thing. Like, all these guys had great seasons. Like, it's hard to take off. Like, Steph was incredible. Luka, Dame, CP, Bradley Beal, Kyrie. I want to say Donovan Mitchell probably should be on there, but like, who are you taking? Like, I just don't know that it makes sense to even take anybody off of that list.
I mean, if you wanted to make... So the problem with Mitchell is he actually played less games than Kyrie. Because if you want to make the argument like, oh, we should take off Kyrie because he only played 54 games, which in this season was actually like a normal amount.
Yeah.
But like Mitchell played fewer games than that. He played 53. So you can't really make that argument.
Yeah.
It's I think the guy I would put 6 on that list is Bradley Beal, which again, this is a guy who was like a couple good games from being like the points per game leader. Like from winning the scoring title.
Great season. Yeah.
But it's just that Wizards team, even despite them coming back in the second half, it's like you never really believed in them. And
yeah.
I don't know. I personally, out of all the guys who were left off, I actually think I would go with Trae Young. Because I think Trae Young had a higher degree of difficulty than a lot of these other guys because he doesn't have a second star. Much more of the Hawks' success fell on his shoulders in comparison to some of these other guys. I mean, Booker had CP3. Mitchell had Conley and Gobert. Again, Mitchell missed a significant amount of games. He missed 17 games, mm-hmm. and they were still the number one seed. And I think that Trae Young, one, he was an all-star snub. He absolutely should have been in the all-star game. And two, I just think that he had a really good season. If you look at the advanced stats on these guys, like Kyrie is far and away having the best statistical season. Like mm-hmm. his percentages are absolutely absurd. He had a 50-40-90 season. But Trae Young is right there with him, like in terms of the advanced stats. And
yeah,
again, it comes back to that degree of difficulty for me where he has to be their best scorer. He has mm-hmm. to be their table setter, their playmaker. Is he not good on defense? No. But
he's, I mean, like not good is an understatement probably.
But at the same time, we're comparing him to who? Brad Beal, Kyrie Irving. Like, these aren't, like, defensive stalwarts.
Yeah, but they at least, I don't know. Like, Beal tried this year.
I would say Trae is trying right now in the playoffs.
I don't believe that. I don't know. If he is trying, then it's more hopeless than I even thought.
I don't know. I just think he had a very underrated season. And
I would say, yes, he had an underrated season. Did he have an all? I just don't believe he had an All-NBA season.
I don't know, man.
That's all.
I mean, his true shooting numbers, what he did offensively. I mean, he's going to be the next version of, you know, like the Harden or Luka Doncic, like these heliocentric teams that all revolve around one guy. Yeah. And the Hawks got away from that a little bit. I mean, his scoring is down this season compared to previous seasons because they finally gave him some guys who can shoot. I mean, Bogdanović in the second half of the year became a huge piece for them that they just did not have last season.
Yeah, he's very good. He's very good.
But yeah, I don't know. That would be my guy. Who would you, I mean, you have to pick someone. You picked Mitchell?
I think Mitchell had a really nice season. I don't know. I don't have any qualms with the guards. I'll say that.
Like those. What about Tatum? What about Tatum over one of the forwards? Because, you know, Tatum actually had more points, more votes than whoever was last. I think it might have been Beal. But because he got more votes as a forward, he got compared to the forwards. And so that's the reason he lost.
Yeah.
I believe that's what happened.
So, I mean, it's easy to look at, like, Randall and be like, yeah, that was fake. Get him out of there.
In retrospect, yeah.
Yeah. Jimmy had a nice season. So I don't know if I can take him off. Paul George was great in the regular season. I don't really, I mean, I think that is correct for the season. I don't know. I don't really have a lot of qualms with who's there, honestly. Tatum, the Boston season was just so weird.
Left a bad taste in your mouth.
They were 500. Like, they shouldn't have been 500.
I mean, so were the Wiz. The Wiz were even more trash.
Yeah, I just think their roster is like way more trash than Boston's.
Honestly, I don't even know if that's true. If you compare Wizards' roster,
Evan Fournier
in the playoffs,
is better than like any other wing that's on the Wizards.
I guess, but that's the comparison you're making. Like Evan Fournier, that's the guy
I know.
You stick up for.
I know.
Like it's
I know,
not
but
good.
I know he's not good. I know. And Kemba missed a lot of time, but Kemba was actually all right. Like he played pretty well when he was actually in the lineup. Marcus Smart's really good. I don't know.
I wanted to. So we brought up a lot of names. We should mention Westbrook as well. Obviously, had a great second half of the season.
Yeah, I'm glad he didn't make it because it just doesn't tell it. It happened with him with the Rockets where he started off horrid, had a great second half, and he made All NBA. It's like okay. It doesn't tell the story of the whole season.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So I appreciate that he's not there just because it doesn't tell the holistic story of what happened. But he was fantastic to end the season. But you talk about Luka, Steph, Dame, Chris Paul, Beal, and Irving. Like, they brought it every game that they were in.
I thought it'd be fun to look at some of the advanced stats that are, like, all-in-one stats.
Mm-hmm.
And tell you who the highest-ranked player who didn't make the All-NBA team was, according to that stat.
Okay.
So starting off, first of all, let me bring up the list because I forgot that Paul George had made it and he was one of the guys I was going to bring up. Okay, I see the list now. I know who they are. Okay.
Okay.
So first, 538's Raptor.
Raptor. Yeah.
Raptor.
By the way, none of these names are anyone we've mentioned so far.
Oh, good.
That, which is why I think it's interesting. Clint Capella.
Oh.
10th overall in Raptor, 538.
Nice.
Should have made it, Andrew. Should have made it. Should have made room for him. Next.
We need an all-NBA fifth team for Clint Capella.
People are saying that. People are talking. We got to have five teams. PR, this one you could probably guess, Zion Williamson.
Yeah,
he's fourth overall in PR. Mm-hmm. Win shares, it was Bam Adebayo, who was ninth in win shares this year.
Bam is somebody that probably preseason people thought, like, hey, he's the second best center in the league now, you know, after their bubble run.
Yeah, for sure. And then two guys who were named in two of these. So Box Plus Minus, ESPN RPM, James Harden. He was seventh in Box Plus Minus, eighth in ESPN RPM. We know why he didn't make it.
Yeah.
And then this one that blew me away. Vorp, and then NBA Math TPA. You know that account?
Yeah.
This guy ranks sixth in Vorp, seventh in NBA Math TPA. It was Nikola Vucevic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, thank you.
No, thank you. Don't like that stat. But the point is, like, you legitimately could make a case for maybe 8 to 10 more guys to have made these teams.
Yeah, you could have. But I think, I don't know, I think overall they did a good job. Tatum, the more I think about it, like, maybe Tatum is, like, the only one that you could really have beef about.
Okay, we've talked about everything I want to talk about except for the Mavs story.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit of Mavs and then we can bounce.
So if you have not read it yet, you know, this is one of the reasons why an athletic subscription is so good, because these types of stories.
Yeah.
And you get like two of these a year where it's just like something juicy, you know,
something
that has been really well sourced, has a ton of details, has a ton of anecdotes. That, I mean, that's the best part. And this one was written by Tim Cato, who was on the Slam and Jam last Friday. Probably should have had him on this week. And
he was on Tampering yesterday's episode on the Athletic NBA show. So check that out.
He was. But it was basically all about Haralabob Vulgaris, who everyone who's been on NBA Twitter for the last decade knows who he is, because he kind of made a name for himself as a gambler. But he became one of those accounts that you follow if you're on NBA Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of his tweets would often come off as super arrogant. I would say that was definitely part of his persona on Twitter. It turns out it might be part of his persona in real life as well.
Mm-hmm.
That may translate. But he would appear on the Bill Simmons podcast. And he got hired by the Mavs a few years ago, and it wasn't necessarily talked about that much.
You
know, he was not like a face of their franchise in any way.
Right.
But this whole article is about how he has kind of been this shadow GM running the Mavs, not necessarily having the final say on everything, but being the driving force behind so many of their decisions. And Tim brings up what some of those decisions are. For instance, last year drafting Josh Green and Tyrell Terry, not asking the scouting department with the Mavs, who they would want. And it was really funny listening to Mavs Moneyball, which I think is a great Mavs blog, and they do a podcast as well. And Tim was actually on that podcast because he used to be the editor-in-chief for Mavs Moneyball. But it was way more interesting listening to them talk about it in light of the podcast, because it's all stuff that they've been talking about for 2 years, which is like, why are they doing this? Like, and I didn't know this because I don't know a ton about Josh Green, but they were like, Josh Green doesn't really fit this Mavs roster. He doesn't fit what the Mavs players traditionally do. This is a really weird pick. And going back to some of their other trades or free agent signings that they had, the big one being DeLon Wright. Like, this isn't going to work. And then you read in the story that Haralabob wanted DeLon Wright to be the starter next to Luka Doncic, and that they tried that out for like two games, and then by the playoffs he wasn't even playing. I just thought it was such a fascinating story because the through line, like, obviously the headline is about Haralabob, but the actual story is about Mark Cuban.
Yeah.
Like, all of this stems from Mark Cuban.
Mm-hmm.
And that 2011 championship is one of those championships where it just completely altered the way certain people were thought about in the league. One of which, who we usually talk about, is Dirk. Mm-hmm. But the other one is Mark Cuban. Yep. Because if Mark Cuban doesn't win that championship, he is thought about so much differently today than he is. And I do feel like the tide is obviously turning on him now. Because now people are starting to pay attention. Like, yeah, what has happened with the Mavs for the last decade? The last decade. I mean, they've been... We talk about the Portland Trailblazers being like a mediocre, like on the treadmill type franchise who can always make the playoffs, but they're never... You never think of them as contender. Like, the Mavs have been significantly worse than that.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about that. They haven't won a playoff series since the last time... Since 2011, the ring year. But I just thought it's such an interesting story because it gets to the heart of this idea of the impact of an owner and what an owner influence can be on a franchise. Sure. Because we've talked for years and years, you know, Dallas would always leave their cap space open because, you know, most recently they were chasing Giannis. Remember when they were chasing D-Will? Remember when they were chasing Dwight Howard? And they never got any of those guys. Remember when they were chasing DeAndre Jordan? That was the closest they got.
They got real close.
Didn't get him.
Yep.
And I feel like we never thought about the reason being Mark Cuban. Mm-hmm. And go onto Mavs Moneyball because Kirk, their site leader, he kind of listed out all the different things that Mark Cuban has done over the last decade that would potentially alienate him from players around the league. And yeah, it's kind of an impressive list. On their own, none of them really mean that much. Like, remember when he said that the Lakers should amnesty Kobe, and then Kobe came out, had a huge game, and then tweeted, amnesty that. You know?
Yes.
It's all things like that.
Yeah.
But and like he said that Westbrook and Draymond Green weren't superstars, and that, like, he has all these unforced errors where he just like talks crap on stars around the league, and then we wonder, why do the Mavs not get any free agents? And I do think there is a connection there, especially in today's world where you read that, and Kirk brought this up in his article, you read that article with Rich Paul in the New Yorker, New York Times, where he still has so much disdain for Bill Simmons because of what Bill Simmons wrote like literally 12 years ago in an article about LeBron. And it's like, imagine if Bill Simmons was the owner of the team, he would never get a Rich Paul client.
Never, ever.
You know? And Mark Cuban is like the closest approximation we have to someone like Bill Simmons being the owner of a team. And so while all of these individual incidents seem like not that big of a deal in a vacuum, put together, you can start building this narrative like, oh, I bet there's a lot of player and player agents around the league who just do not like Mark Cuban.
I'm sure, yes. And as we saw, like, with the Knicks... As we continue to see with the Knicks, like, there's a reason why they don't get free agents, right? You know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, they could have, if they were just a normal franchise, they probably would have had KD and Kyrie.
Yes. Yes. Had they just had an owner that just, no one even really knew who they were.
And like, this is one of the nice things you could say about the Oklahoma City ownership group. Like, they just don't, you never hear anything.
Nothing.
Never hear anything. Nothing. You never hear a quote.
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty wild.
Which is the way it should be.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's interesting. Rich Paul doesn't have any Mavs clients.
Yeah, he had Nerlens and got him to turn down that huge deal. Mm-hmm. Remember that one? But that was the last one. But yeah, and going back to that, you know, like Mark Cuban said that you know, the nice thing about Doncic is that he was a European player and they actually learned how to play the game. And then he made that statement about AAU players, how like they just make mixtapes and learn how to dribble or something like that. And like, again, in a vacuum, it's one of those things that it's on Twitter for a day or two and goes away. But I do think those things build up over time. And Mark Cuban's never going to acknowledge that. I mean, you saw his response to this article. He said, total BS. It's like, well, somebody was telling Tim these things. Someone right. within your organization was telling Tim these things.
It just shows how tone deaf he is. Or like just doesn't have a pulse on his organization anymore.
Yeah. Or has never had.
Perhaps has never had.
Because you go back to the sexual assault stuff. You go back right. to the fact how hard it was for them to ever build a team around Dirk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they like felt like they threaded that needle with that one championship ring. And then he instantly blew it up. And that was always like the thing after that 2011 run. It's like, well, he didn't even let it run it back. And all because he thought he was going to get another free agent because he thinks mm-hmm. so highly of his organization and the Mavs and everything. And it's never happened.
No. So, it is a problem. It is a huge problem. And if you think that Luka's going to be their Dirk, I think this makes you rethink all of it, right? Like, he'll sign a second contract. He'll be there eight seasons or whatever. But would you be surprised if Luka was somewhere else in season 9?
I wouldn't be surprised if he was somewhere else in season 7 or 8.
Yeah, right. Because he may signal and be like, hey, I'm out. Get me out of here now.
And for everyone who, you know, is talking about, who is framing this story as like, oh, Luka's going to leave the Mavs. Like, him leaving the Mavs would seem very rare and unique in today's world, even though it feels like that's where we're headed. With like, we've talked about players, maybe some player will take the qualifying offer just to get out of their deal earlier. But if you go back like in NBA history, it's actually not that rare for like high level guys to get traded away from their teams, like Steve Francis or Chris Webber. Like, there is precedent for guys early in their careers getting out of their teams. Mm-hmm. And so it would actually be a return to form in some ways if we start seeing that more earlier, even though we all kind of anticipate we're headed that way because of just all the general player movement. So I think it's something to watch. I ultimately think it's good for the Mavs that this came out, because it should force them to look at everything in a way they might not have otherwise. But who knows?
Yeah, it would be a real problem if Mark Cuban keeps his guy Bob Vilgaris around after this summer.
Oh, so if there's any hint of truth to Luka not liking him and him also having a lot of control over things like player lineups and rotations, then yeah, you have to get rid of him. You should have gotten rid of him already. And he's up for an extension, so it could happen this summer if they just let him go.
Yep. Did Dort get snubbed?
No, I don't think so.
All right, thanks so much for listening to our podcast. This will be the last Down to Dunk episode with Alex and I before the lottery next Wednesday. We will know, Alex. We will know. And we will have a show. So we plan to record a live podcast at the Mule. We can do something else too with you and I on Wednesday, talking about where they are and what the possibilities are with the team. So,
did you say what the possibilities are?
What's the possibilities? I've got lunch on my mind. I need some pasta. Hope you guys have a great Wednesday, and we will talk to you guys again.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. $5. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.